In collaboration with CFC's Teaching and Learning Team, the College of Charleston's Department of Hispanic Studies is proud to present HispaCast, a podcast dedicated to highlighting the impressive contributions and accomplishments of students, alumni, faculty, and programs related to Hispanic studies.
Welcome to HispaCast, a series of podcasts featuring the faculty, staff, and the programs of Hispanic studies, as well as people with notable connections to the department. Today's HispaCast focuses on Hispanic studies graduate Ms. Emily Farley, who graduated with, among other degrees, a Spanish minor in 2007. Since then, she's gone on to do a lot of great things, including helping to build Pulse Labs AI from a startup to its present state. So without further ado, welcome, Amy.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm going to jump right into our questions here. I want to know more about Pulse Labs, about your position. You know, how did this company form? What was your role in its creation? What does the company do specifically?
Yeah, sure thing. So Pulse Labs, we build technology that helps big tech companies like Amazon, Google, Nissan, and many others build better software that is more user-friendly. So our primary focus is on usability research. We have a suite of software tools that product managers and UX researchers can use to understand how people are using websites, mobile apps, and smart home technology. Also, we do some in-vehicle research, which is very cool, seeing how people use touchscreens and other vehicle technology. And then we also have a new product called Flight Recorder that is specifically geared towards mobile app developers to help them get real-time feedback from how people are using their technology. So in terms of the early days of Pulse Labs, the company was started in 2017 by our co-founders, Dylan Swick and Abhishek Suthan, and they were part of the very first Amazon Alexa Techstars Accelerator. So I joined in November of 2018. At that point, we had, I think, 8 employees at the company, including the 2 co-founders. So like 2 co-founders, 6 people. We're now at 45, 46, and we're distributed across the US, India, and Canada.
Well, that's pretty impressive. So you're talking about a lot of really big names in the tech industry and beyond. So Google, Amazon, and Nissan. And the first thing that occurs to me is clearly there is a global international component to this. Mm-hmm. How does that figure in as far as, you know, culturally trying to figure out how these larger corporations who have multiple offices around the world and multiple, you know, clientels, how does that, you know, what has been your experience with that sort of global international component to it?
Yeah, so for maybe the first 4 or 5 years, the majority of our connections were with offices primarily in the US, occasionally in Europe. We did do some work in Brazil for a little while. And the big thing is understanding how these companies operate in general, but then also, you know, understanding the nuances of some of the different cultures of, you know, the offices that are in other countries. And then also, you know, one of the big things, it's like working across time zones, doing that time zone math and understanding, you know, when is too early, when is too late to get in touch with folks.
Yeah, it really is. I always bring up my own personal experience. My son does that same thing. He works for a company. He's a computer scientist, works for a company in India. And I mean, there's a lot of cultural connections that, you know, that he you know, wants to make. And sometimes it's tough if you don't have that background. But have you traveled at all to any particular places that you're, or do you want to travel to some places that are associated with the business?
I would love to go to India. There's folks that I've been working with in India for 4 or more years that I have yet to meet in person. Because we're primarily a remote company, you know, pretty much all of our business happens virtually. There have been a couple times where our leadership team has gotten together in Salt Lake City, where our official mailing address is. And then, of course, whenever I travel in the U.S. and happen to be in the same city as someone that I work with, you know, I will do my best to catch up with them. I actually caught up with a coworker who works here in Charleston yesterday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, all right, going back to that Charleston context, part of the career seminar purpose is to figure out people who graduated with a degree in Spanish, minor or major, you know, how does that path lead them from, you know, the cistern yard on graduation day to where they find themselves now? And looking at you had a really interesting undergraduate degree and graduating with a minor in Spanish and then double majoring in historic preservation and urban studies. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about that path. So now you're working for Pulse AI, doing a number of different things, but, you know, how did you get from, you know, graduating with that minor in Spanish to where you find yourself now?
Yeah, it was definitely a winding and unexpected road. The big thing for me that I took away from the College of Charleston in general was a broad understanding of many topics and the knowledge and the foundation to set myself up to learn how to learn. So that has allowed me to be incredibly adaptable and to be able to take on opportunities as they come to me. So shortly after I graduated, I ended up moving to Kansas. I worked as a preservation planner for a small city there. I was also the only person in City Hall who spoke Spanish. And wow. That town, actually, they do their own water and garbage and sewer billing. So there would be, you know, people of the community who were coming in to pay their bill, who needed assistance, who only spoke Spanish. So I kind of became the default Spanish translator there.
Right.
After a little while, I realized that the pace of government work was not for me. So I took a little bit of time off, bounced around a few different odd jobs. I actually worked in a restaurant as a line cook for a while because one of the dreams that I thought that I wanted was to run a restaurant. Okay. That work helped me learn that was not something that I wanted to do long term, but it was a very interesting experience. And of course, there were several folks working there who were native Spanish speakers, so got to connect with them. And one of the trends that I've seen is being able to communicate with people in their own language or in a way that makes sense to them really helps build strong bonds and connections and helps build trust. And so after my time in Kansas, I was just like, hey, I love Charleston. Let me go back there, see what works out. And somewhat by accident, I ended up working for CreateSpace, which was an Amazon subsidiary. It's now been absorbed into Amazon corporate, but it was a self-publishing platform for paperback books. That office and organization has now been combined with Kindle Direct Publishing, which is the self-publishing platform that you know today,
right,
that offers both print and ebooks. And while I was there, we had a large sister support team out of San Jose, Costa Rica. So I actually worked very closely with several of the folks there. And during my time there, I ended up in a role called Executive Customer Relations, where we were handling high severity, high impact escalations, threats of legal action, negative publicity, issues that were impacting hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of authors around the world. And generally, our team only functioned in English, and we would rely on some of the more senior support specialists in other countries to help with, you know, Spanish or French or Italian or German escalations. And what I was able to do was actually listen in on some of the Spanish language escalations and help coach some of the Spanish-speaking team members from Costa Rica to help them develop their skills and be better able to handle those high severity escalations.
That's a lot of varied activity and it might be quite stressful to get in those high, you know, those escalated, and it seems like you handled them well. One of the things that you had mentioned about, and I've heard this from more than one guest on Hispacast, is getting involved with this broader liberal arts education and then, you know, not knowing, you know, how it's going to impact things, but inevitably it does, because it does make you more flexible to be able to consider things from differing, you know, points of view. So, I mean, this is something that I guess people should keep in mind as they're going through their studies and taking classes that they may not see the use for.
And sorry to interrupt, but one of the big things that I have seen and continue to see is the rate of technological advancement and the changes happening in the world right now. The jobs that will be available to students in 10 years don't exist now,
right.
And a good chunk of the jobs that exist now won't exist in 10 years.
Right.
So the way that Pulse Labs got started, we built systems to let people conduct research on things that were running on Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant. Alexa didn't get started until 2014.
Yeah, that's a great point, because really there's, you know, technology always disrupts the market, and as technology moves at this exponential rate, it's going to happen more and more. So,
absolutely,
you know, you're going to have to be flexible. It's scary in some sense, but also there's a lot of possibility. So you talked a bit about the impacts of, you know, that there's your study of Spanish language and culture had on Spanish language and Hispanic cultures had on your professional life. Any other sort of unforeseen or foreseen impacts of what you studied affecting your professional direction or giving you insight to what you do in the context of Pulse AI?
Yeah, so at Pulse Labs, it's come in handy because, you know, the technology that's powering voice assistants and now what we're seeing with large language models like ChatGPT, Google Gemini, Claude, and other things, that is all rooted in linguistics. And so understanding other languages, understanding how language components work with each other, and even understanding, you know, the differences in dialects across regions. I mean, we had a customer ask us to collect high fidelity audio of U.S. Spanish.
Right.
And I had to go back to them and say, you know, what do you mean U.S. Spanish? Do you mean people who grew up in the U.S. speaking Spanish? Do you mean native Spanish speakers who moved to the U.S.? Do you mean people from Mexico in the U.S.? Do you mean people from the Caribbean in the U.S.? What do you mean by that? And so what it has done is it has equipped me with the knowledge to kind of probe deeper and understand what the customer is actually looking for. Because a lot of times, some of the teams that we're working with, they don't necessarily have a linguist on staff. So being able to kind of read between the lines and try to understand, you know, what is the final result that they're trying to get to in terms of the data or in terms of how they're going to be using the technology that they're building. That combined with the things that I learned through the Hispanic Studies program has really helped me be both a better researcher and, you know, a better support system to our customers.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, as far as, you know, looking at language monolithically, it's not the way things are. There is, you know, there are these varieties and what's more, as you well know, there are things that if you're building a chat bot or something which is going to interact, there are certain expressions that you may not want to use in certain contexts. So, I mean, yeah, I could talk all day about this, but very interesting. So, all right, narrowing the focus a bit to Hispanic studies, I have a couple of questions on your experience.
Yeah.
One is maybe a favorite class that you had and why you enjoyed it. And the other question regards your experience in the Casa Hispana, which probably was not called that back in the day. I think it was probably called the Casa Hispanica.
Yeah, I think we did call it Casa Hispanica.
And then the Trujillo, of course, in Spain, you studied abroad. Mm-hmm. So maybe touch on those topics.
Yeah, so in terms of favorite classes, the three that I would really call out, History of Spain, Renaissance to Present, I found very interesting, particularly the history of the Spanish Civil War, the way that it tied into World War II.
Yep.
And also, if you look at some of the geopolitical outcomes and where Europe is today, both within the European Union and within, you know, Spain as a country, it just helped me better understand like that particular period of Spanish history, but also the impact on the region overall. Latin American literature, 1800 to present.
You have very specific memory on these things.
Yes. So actually, the several of the books that we read, I keep on my office shelf, and I can actually see them in my background when I am on, like, Google Meets and Zoom calls.
That is so cool. Yeah. So that's all right. So what about your Casa experience in Trujillo?
Let's maybe start with Trujillo, because that one happened first. So that was the summer after my freshman year. And before going to Trujillo, I thought that I spoke Spanish very well. I had never spoken Spanish in a context where I was with people who did not speak English.
Right.
And that is a vastly different experience. And my parents called, I think it was the second day that I was there. And I actually broke down in tears because I was like, these people don't understand me. I don't actually speak Spanish. I don't know why I'm here. But it turned out to be one of the best and most formative experiences of my life. Just being somewhere completely different. Going through that experience of having to communicate somewhere where English wasn't a dominant language.
Right.
That's one of the really nice things about Trujillo, is because it is a small town, you do get that truly immersive experience.
Yeah.
And then coming back and being part of the Casa Hispana for 3 years, that helped me like continue to build and maintain fluidity. Because we were speaking Spanish every day, maybe not all day, I'll be real honest. Like, I know it's the rule that you're supposed to speak Spanish all the time when you're in the house, but you know, we were speaking Spanish every day. And then also all of the ladies that I lived with, you know, they were very interested in Hispanic culture as well. So we had friends who were international students. We were going out to salsa night. We were, you know, doing a lot of things where we were speaking Spanish, getting immersed into the culture, and really, you know, building connections with each other and across the community here in Charleston.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I've to your point of, you know, people being afraid to go abroad because, you know, I don't speak Spanish as well as I want to. Well, you never do until you jump into it. And
right.
I had situations like that as well. And what about briefly about the Casa Hispana or Hispanica, as it was called back in the day?
Yeah, so my time there, I was there for 3 years, and you know, just that constant practice and always kind of switching back and forth between English and Spanish helped me be able to, you know, really solidify that foundation of language. Like, now I'm at a point where I can go, you know, maybe weeks without speaking Spanish, but within a few moments kind of be really back into it and able to pick it up fluidly. And part of that is making a conscious effort to continue to practice. You know, as someone who's speaking it as a second language, I do have to read, I have to listen to music, I have to do things to maintain it.
Right.
And the Casa Hispana taught me how to do those things.
Okay, so this is the time travel portion of the interview, mm-hmm. when I give you know, participants a chance to travel back in time and give current students, right, you know, sort of advice or clarity on things as they contemplate life after graduation. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give maybe yourself way back in the day, or just in general students who are graduating or planning to graduate from Hispanic studies?
Yeah. So the biggest one, if you want to set yourself up for being able to speak Spanish fluently and understand native Spanish speakers at speed, do a study abroad program.
Yeah.
The summer was great. I wish that I would have done one of the semester programs. So if I could go in a time travel machine, I would probably do the Cuba program. I don't know if it's still available.
It is. Actually, they're there now.
Yeah. I would do that one.
Incredible.
And then also, like, One of the things that I struggled with shortly after graduation, when I realized that work and the majors that I chose was not what I wanted to do, I really had a little bit of an existential crisis because I was like, man, I studied this for so long, but now I don't want to do it.
Right.
What am I going to do? Because I didn't want to be a city planner. I didn't want to do historic preservation anymore. And just kind of realizing that College of Charleston, Hispanic Studies, the coursework that you do while you're here, it equips you with a set of skills that you can mix and match to do almost anything. So definitely think about what you want to do after you graduate, but don't feel like you have to tie yourself to one specific thing for the rest of your life, because that's not how the working world works anymore.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining us for this HispaCast. This has been Amy Farley from the class of 2007, Spanish minor. Thanks for joining, and have a wonderful time in Charleston when you're visiting.
Thanks, Mike. It's been a pleasure.